I'm with Stikeen MLA and BC Minister of State for Lands and Natural Resource Operations, Nathan Cullen. Nathan's joined us to talk about a fishing ban declared by Gitxsan Hereditary Chiefs. I guess first question for you, Minister Cullen. Travel restrictions for BC could be lifted as soon as June 15th. Locals in the Northwest, of course, want to fish in their rivers and lakes either way. But as Gitxsan Hereditary Chief Guyek Brian Williams explained to us, BC fishing licenses won't be recognized by the Gitxsan government. Have you and the provincial government talked to the Gitxsan Hereditary government about their conservation concerns and their indefinite ban on sport fishing?
Yeah, we've had conversations over many years because I think there's a shared concern, Chris, about what's going on with salmon in our northwest waters, this on the Skeena, the Bulkley, Wetsinqua, a whole number of rivers, because we've seen just this constant just depletion of stocks that sometimes gets to a crisis point and back and down. So the main conversation we have, there's the crisis management team that's been set up by the Gitxsan, and we provide technical support there. That is, it's a group that's focused very much on harvest management as to who's taking which salmon where. And a whole bunch of that jurisdiction, of course, is federal. On the provincial side of things, though, when we have authorities and we have jurisdictions, then we're providing support. But if you pull back a little more broadly, there is a reconciliation table, and that the province is at that table with the Gitxsan and continuing to support Gitxsan rights and title. With respect to the fishing permits that have been issued, we've always advised fishermen to be aware of where they are, to know whose traditional territory they're on. And in particular, there are places along the river called Anats that they're traditional Gitxsan fishing sites. And many local non-Gitxsan people are aware of those particular places. And we ask people to be very aware and more than that, just be more sensitive to those sites. And those fishing permits that have been issued for people to recreational fish are still valid. And we are still proceeding with Gitxsan conversations about their own rights and title and then self-determination and governance.
Now, you say they're still valid. This ban has been in effect technically for 3 years, according to the chief. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty long-running grievance. Gitxsan government also put out a statement a few weeks ago that the province is, and this is their quote, perpetuating cultural genocide by withdrawing on fishing crisis talks with their crisis management team. This came a month after they said that they met with you in particular and then had a proposed mm-hmm. letter of engagement on truth and reconciliation ignored by your office. Is this accurate from your perspective? And did the province stop meeting with their crisis management team?
No, we're still providing technical assistance to that crisis management team. Again, the issues at that table are about allocation, and a bunch of that falls within Canada's jurisdiction to mm-hmm. to negotiate with the Tahltan. There's, you know, this is around issues about the salmon harvest further in the river and out on the oceans. I did meet with the Gitxsan leadership, about a month ago. They contacted my office, and we've had conversations. We didn't ignore their letter. So it's ongoing. And again, the larger, deeper conversation about Gitxsan rights and title and government to government negotiations with the Gitxsan about self-determination, broader and bigger than fisheries, forestry, all sorts of things within the land base, those continue. And I encourage all of that to keep going, because we have across BC, not just here in the Northwest, but we have moments, whether it's on logging or hunting rights or fishing rights, where the underlying challenge of decades of colonialism have greatly hurt the rights and title of First Nations people. And the only way to see a better day is if we're negotiating at the table together to try to reconcile those and come to some kind of agreement so that we know what the rules of the game are. We know places where people can fish, where logging can take place well, and all of those other issues that flare up, because they, with a good land use plan, with a good agreement with the local First Nations government, then we have a lot more chance of coming together, because we're all concerned with the same things. We know that fish are in crisis. We know that we have to be more careful with our natural resources more generally. And all of this is now built on the foundation of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which is, of course, law now in BC for some time.
You brought up colonialism. A big problem in solving the issues that have come down from that seem to be bureaucracy and jurisdictional issues, especially with provinces and the federal government. You mentioned it right there. Is there any sort of collaboration? Like, I know when with the Wet'suwet'en, there had to be a meeting with the provincial authority, federal ministers, and the First Nation at the same time. You're working nation to nation with a lot of nations, First Nations, you and other ministers on different issues. Is there some sort of collaboration with the federal government, with the Gitxsan in particular?
So more broadly, it greatly depends. There seem to be some places, like we had a child and family agreement with the Wet'suwet'en, for example, that involved the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs, the band councils, Canada, and BC. And I think while there's still, challenges and things that we have to fix broadly, that is the best outcome because you have all jurisdictions at the table figuring out the new way to do things over incredibly important things like our kids and what happens when a family's in trouble or we need to help out. So there are n numerous tables I can point to around the province where Canada has shown up. Other tables, that's less true. But I'll give you an example up in Lower Post, which is north of us near the Yukon border. We came together with Canada and the Kaskadene to sign an agreement where their administration building, which was their residential school for decades, will be torn down and a new administration building will be put in its place. So, some people will see that as small. For Lower Post and the Kaskadene, it's huge. And it took all three levels of government, BC, Canada, and the Kaskadene Council, to be able to come to that resolution. With the Gitxsan specifically in your question, there are absolutely moments where all three governments are involved, Gitxsan, Canada, and BC. I suppose in general, not often enough. And I've seen from our provincial government a willingness, whether it's building homes on reserve, which is something BC's never really done before, or just trying to bring Canada to the table. We're working on a lot of marine issues right now, which of course have huge federal implications. And I've seen generally more a willingness from Ottawa to participate and in some cases share authority with BC, provide some support in other ways. And that's, I mean, I was in Ottawa for a number of years as an MP, and that was just impossible to even imagine 10 years ago. I think the more BC takes a proactive role, the more it seems Ottawa is willing to either step up or step aside in some cases and allow us to get the work done.
Yeah, jurisdiction can be a prickly issue. I mean, there's just cross section. You look at the medical issues, it's you can go on and on and on. But part of your mandate letter I wanted to bring up from the premier was to modernize this land use planning, and this is going to obviously, hopefully involve the federal government in some areas. But this is for our rivers, lakes, forests, like you had mentioned, a whole bunch of issues in collaboration with communities, stakeholders, and indigenous partners. Where have you gone with that? And does it include more control over things like fishing regulations for First Nations?
That's interesting. Yeah, it's so what we've identified is nine different tables around the province where we're doing land use planning in a whole new and I would argue much better way. It brings more of the community into the discussion. It respects our legal rights because of all the court cases that I know you're aware of. The changes under BC law, under the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, that says land use planning is going to be different than it was 30 years ago. It's got to be more comprehensive, and it has to be far more inclusive and respectful of rights and title. So those nine tables, and they're significant areas of British Columbia, are advancing in a pretty remarkable way. We have another tier right behind them of 10 more tables that are coming up. There's a couple of elements you need. You need willing and able partners. So the capacity has to be there. The province and sometimes the feds have to make sure that we're putting resources in so we can negotiate on things like, moose and habitat and forestry regulations. Like, these are not small things to try to accomplish, and you need to make sure there's capacity on the First Nations side. Some First Nations governments are ready. They've got the people in place. They've got the data that they want to bring to the table. Others are just building that up. And so you need all of the pieces to come into place, and then you can really advance things. And my hope is that, as we were talking about before, there's these so-called hot button issues that come in. They flare up. They're important. And I think sometimes they're made worse when we don't have a land use plan. We don't have some version of an agreement with First Nations, be it a treaty or some other reconciliation agreement between the province and First Nations. And those will just keep happening, right? Like, if we don't have a good land use plan that we've all agreed to, we've got it set down, we know what the rules are, all of these flare-ups will continue to happen, as opposed to, here are the set of rules, here are the agreements on the land, this is what the guidance that we have for all of our decisions. And that's where the progress really gets made, because then we can progress together, right? We can know what the general plan is between us, and then we can move ahead together.
Yeah, knowing the rules, I was going to ask you about that, but first I want to touch on one other part of your mandate letter. It says to support people and businesses with a focus on regional and rural communities in the government's COVID-19 response and recovery. What that makes me think of is the tour guides, the people that make a living with the sport fishing. Have you spoken to tour guides who are still around
Oh,
after
yeah.
suffering through this pandemic and now need to deal with issues like the Gitxsan fishing ban?
Yeah, and I know with a number of guides, both in Gitxsan territory and in other places, both fishing and hunting, and a number of other guide operators that have their own agreements with First Nations. They also, those that don't or those that are unable, they're looking to the province for a clear set of rules as to how to plan their business and what will be available. Of course, this has been said far too many times, but COVID has made this past year incredibly difficult for those in the tourism business, be they taking locals out or people from other provinces or other countries. Just all the travel bans have been so difficult. Now we're talking the day after the province introduced our stages back to reopening, and I've talked to some guides already and some tour operators that are incredibly encouraged. We know that because in that mandate is about me bringing support to rural BC and to northern BC in particular, that we've had a pretty good success rate, broadly speaking, with most of our businesses here in the Northwest. There have been, for sure, it's not been equal, I guess, in terms of the hit. Some places, especially if you're running restaurants, hotels, they've taken a much harder hit. Broadly across the northern economy, we've recovered, I believe, over 100% of the jobs that we initially lost when the pandemic forced us to shut down. And so that's good. And we've seen the response to people now that we have a plan to reopen that's been very positive. So it's going to stay challenging, but I also think there we have the potential of real resurgence within the tourism sector in general, maybe guiding in particular, especially if we're able to reopen safely. People are going to get vaccinated and make sure everyone else is safe. I hope you got your appointment or your shot, Chris. And that
Absolutely.
we then also simultaneously have more and more agreements on the ground with First Nations governments, with local community governments, so that there's a bit more certainty when bringing people out. And there's no very few people I talk to that say we should return back to what it was two or three generations ago, where there was just much more of a Wild West mentality of just people going where they wanted to do and doing what they wanted to do without any real consideration for the local impacts or environmental concerns as well.
Well, like you said, the rules got to be clear for everybody if they want to go around the province, different First Nation area to different First Nation area. If the rules are going to be different in each place, which, if you're dealing with one at a time, they could be. I'm just wondering, can there be agreements reached that last long term? Because we don't want this to be a short-term thing that is in constant negotiation. I don't think anybody wants that in this nation-to-nation approach, or is there a, or province-to-nation, or is there a larger meeting with multiple First Nations that might be needed to ensure everyone's treated equitably? Rules are obvious across BC for everyone who lives and works in the province.
Well, I guess that my only hesitation in saying yes, there should be one set of blanket rules is that we know with things like fishing or any kind of resource extraction, it depends on what's happening in that ecosystem, right? Some places can handle more, some places can handle less. Some need to go into recovery, and we just simply can't. Some species, be it sturgeon or, species that are more sensitive to what we take, we have to be a little bit more careful with our plans, and they're site specific, they're region specific. We'll also have places where agreements have already been established between BC and the local First Nation, and other places where we're just at the very beginning stages. So while there I can understand the appeal to universality, it's also true in our lives that every town we go into is a little bit different. They have slightly different zoning laws, or they have a different vision for what businesses they want to attract and which ones they don't. We allow local municipalities a great deal of latitude in trying to set their own vision and future. I think it only makes sense that that is also true at a regional scale for First Nations. You asked about could there be, I guess I sort of assume some groupings of First Nations that have a collective plan. We've seen that as well. There are what we'd call sort of aggregate negotiations where you have a number of different First Nations within a large watershed or several watersheds that come together, negotiate collectively with the province over some specific things. Where that's appropriate, that makes a lot of sense too. And we've got tables that do that as well across BC.
Well, it sounds like you got a lot of tables going on.
Yeah.
When it comes to actually getting the things done, the rules in place, everybody can look it up, search it online. I'm going to the Skeena. This is the rules. This is the First Nation authority. And you never really answered, will First Nations have any control over fishing regulations in your negotiations?
In terms of the enforcement, there are places where First Nations are just beginning. They're more like pilot projects on the coast where there's a guardian program and they've signed agreements with BC Parks, for example, to help with enforcement. Because we just don't have very many boots on the ground, Chris, when it comes to conservation officers, BC Parks. We just have not resourced that to be able to be everywhere all the time. And there are guardian programs that are out there that are on the ground, have a great deal of local knowledge. So I know in some places there have been some. I think they're more in the pilot project. We're trying it this year. We're going to try it for 5 years, where there's joint enforcement or. But that's I think that's very initial stages. There's a bunch of training you got to do to get up to being able to do compliance and enforcement. It's not a simple thing of sticking a badge on somebody, but it's encouraging to me, and it makes sense if you have people that are from the place, love the place, and are going to be there forever, that they're involved more and more with how we manage on the ground. And but take it back a step, which is how do we set the rules, and setting the rules together, to my mind, makes them a lot more durable, a lot more accepted by everybody, because nobody, likes having rules imposed on them, especially if they're not appropriate to the place and the culture and the time. And that's true for Indigenous people, non-Indigenous people. As a rural representative, I've heard the frustrations of Ottawa or Victoria setting rules that just don't make sense for where we live and how we live.
Bureaucracy. That's what people think of when they think of too many rules from government. Speaking of which, I'll leave you with this last question here that I had. It's in your mandate letter. I can bring that back up. And it's kind of related to this because you are to work to create a new ministry for lands and natural resource operations that would split it from forests and rural development. This can seem like more bureaucracy. How will this be a good thing? Especially when dealing with things that already require multiple ministries, multiple governments working together, like agreements with First Nations.
Yeah, so the new reality, I think this has always been true, but it's even more important now, is that you just these silos when you're trying to do something like land use planning, the ministries have to be talking to each other constantly. And what we've seen in some places is that teams are built, and there's somebody from environment, there's somebody from mining, from agriculture, with the authority to be able to figure things out at a table. And I think that's the way when government's being effective, we break down the silos. We don't say, well, one hand's not talking to the other. You have them all participating at a table. We also drag together very high levels of each of those ministries, deputy ministers, on a pretty frequent basis that deal with natural resource issues and challenges and policy, setting the policy across so that ag does understand what mining's interest is here and forestry, et cetera. I'm not interested in putting any proposals to the government to make things worse. Being able to be much more nimble, much more attuned to local interests, and of course, much more respectful of Indigenous rights and title is the models that we're working on. Those are the design principles we have. And so I want to put forward proposals that gets things done, a ministry that gets things done, a ministry that solves problems, because we should be built in such a way that we can pull whatever expertise and resources we need to solve those problems rather than saying that's somebody else's mandate, that's somebody else's issues. We're one people living here on the ground. We're trying to figure out how to do things better. We need to have government structures built in such a way that make that more likely rather than less likely. So, yeah, somebody said, when this ministry was put together, it was meant to be one tent, but what ended up happening is you had a bunch of silos put under one tarp. It didn't necessarily break down all the barriers that needed to be broken down. And so we're looking at some pretty novel ways of doing things and looking around the world, but mostly we've been consulting with industry, environment groups, local governments, and a huge consultation with Indigenous leadership to know, all right, what's working, what's not. What do we need to do better? And how would you build a ministry to help us do that? Which is totally novel. Normally, government wouldn't talk to really anybody if it was restructuring. It just internally figure it something out and then apply it. This, we're trying to be very inclusive of the people who are affected by the way that we do things. And that's what we've been doing for the last couple of months.
Well, it sounds good that you're talking to other stakeholders that will be affected by this new ministry, but how does creating a new ministry when the silos can't be broken down within the ministry as it is right now,
Yeah.
help? How will this help?
Somebody said you can't restructure your way out of something that you cultured your way into. You have to change the culture. You have to say, and again, I can point to places around British Columbia where the culture within the government is very collaborative. Here are the six most important ministries. They each assign somebody to the task, and they're sitting down with local government, First Nations government, and they're figuring things out week to week, day to day. And that to me is a fantastic model, but it's kind of a model that runs against the current system. And so we want to encourage it. We want to encourage the collaboration. Restructuring itself by its own sake doesn't necessarily solve anything unless you bring the cultural change with you, unless you bring the notion that you need to be communicating with local communities far more often, need to be collaborative across ministries who each have their own laws and responsibilities they need to uphold, and that we have the common vision coming out the gate so that when we're taking on new ways of doing forestry, new ways of looking at recreational fishing, that we've got that voice at the table so that people can get to the solutions much faster than saying, well, we have to wait until we can get a hold of somebody from Ministry X. That's why the things fit together for me, changing and modernizing land use planning. And considerations for a new ministry in order to do more of that, solve more problems more quickly. That to me is what's encouraging about the task the Premier has set me on.
Okay, well, it sounds like the idea is to change the culture and you're not stuck in some sort of Kafka-esque, go to this ministry, no, you're in the wrong ministry, wait at the ministry. If this works and you create this ministry, when is the plan to open the office door, change the title, and have it up and running?
Right. So we're just wrapping up consultations now. We've done near 100 hours of Zoom with all those different interest groups that I mentioned, probably about half of that with Indigenous governments and stakeholders. The proposal, then we got to put it together. Here's our options. We put that in front of the Premier and Cabinet in a few months. If they green light that or one of the options, then in the fall, we start to reallocate and rebudget and then launch by end of year. Fully up and running by beginning of next year. That's the plan right now. And we're on schedule so far with what we've been trying to do.
And then you will become minister, not minister of state.
No, I'm not. This is not me building a job description for myself. Once I hand that proposal in, The premier gets to do whatever. He can reject it, assign it, do whatever he likes with it. I'm happy to be doing this. And we've been really, I hope we're building support within all those groups that traditionally maybe were at loggerheads more often than not. And the support for changing land use planning, the support for having more collaboration within government and building a ministry that does that by its nature has been from forestry and mining sectors to First Nations government to ENGOs. Like, it's been quite remarkable how everyone identifies this need that good land use planning and good government structure supporting that is essential to everybody's interest, regardless of which point of view you held.
Yeah, hopefully it'll help people know what they're getting into when they go somewhere. And like you said, rules ahead of time would help. So, best of luck.
100%.
We can always hope our
Thanks.
government is successful in these kind of endeavors. And we'll keep an eye on the Gitxsan situation. And yeah, be sure to follow up if anything happens there.